From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday, and I'm Joe Palca. If you like to climb trees as a kid, you know that it can be a whole different world at the top of a tree. But this week, researchers reported in the journal Nature just how different a world it can be up at the top of some of the world's biggest trees. At the top of the giant redwoods, over 300 feet tall, it's almost desert dry, even though the ground below is dripping wet. And that may be why these tall trees don't grow taller still. Joining me now to talk about the factors that control tree height are my guests. George Koch is an assistant professor in the Department of Biology at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff. He joins me from the studios of member station KNAU on the campus there. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And Steve Sillett is, did I say that right?
Yes.
Good, is an associate professor of botany in the Department of Biological Sciences at Humboldt State University in Arcata, California. He joins me by phone from his office there.
Thanks, Joe.
Oh, it's good to talk to you. So let me start with you, George Koch. What drew you to the tops of trees? Because I did notice that in some of your earlier work, you were sort of down in the roots looking at radishes.
Well, that's true. There was actually a lot between those two study systems. But in any case, I was drawn to the tops of trees by some interesting papers that have come out over the last decade or two about this concept of hydraulic limitation, and then really, literally almost drawn to the tops of the trees by meeting Steve Sillett and beginning a roughly decade-long collaboration involving climbing trees, which he's an expert at.
Okay, well, with that, Steve Sillett, what got you up at the top?
Well, I started working in the redwoods when I took this job at Humboldt State back in 1996 and was surprised to find that there hadn't been a single published study on the canopy of the tallest forest in the world. And so set to task of getting some basic information about how these trees function and what their structure allows these forests to do.
Okay. I'd like to invite all our listeners to join this discussion about the tops of trees and the differences thereof. First, let me give you the number. It's 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And Steve Sillett, how do you get up to the top of a 300-foot-tall redwood tree? I don't suppose there are any elevators handy.
No. The tallest tree is actually just about 370 feet.
Wow.
And a lot of times in these forests, there aren't any branches for the lower 250 feet of the tree. So you need to launch a line up into the crown over something sturdy that you could trust your life to. So we use powerful hunting bows and rubber-tipped arrows trailing a fishing filament and fire the thing up through the crown over some sturdy branches, and then we use that fishing filament to pull over a cord that then we use to pull over a rope. And when you secure one end of the rope, you can climb the other end using mechanical ascenders used by people who climb cliffs and caves and things.
I feel duty-bound as the father of small children to tell people that you shouldn't just try this because it sounds like fun. You should know what you're doing before you start shooting bow and arrow up into the top of a tree.
Yeah.
Or to climb it.
The first step is the most dangerous because you're not quite sure what you're over, and there could be things that are dead and broken and come down on you as you're climbing up. So that's the most hazardous part of the job.
I see. So we'll say that we should leave this for the professionals. But once you get up the first 250 feet, how do you get up the rest?
Well, you know, there's a whole industry, arborists, that the tree surgeons, whatever you want to call them, that are concerned with tree health, and they've developed rope techniques to enable them to get out to the edges of the crowns of trees in urban areas and suburban areas, and so they can do their pruning. So we just advance ropes one limb at a time and moving up slowly but surely.
I see. And so, George Koch, what were you anxious for Steve Sillett to measure once he was up at the top of the trees, or did you go up there with him?
Yeah, I went up with him, as did his student Greg Jennings, who actually did a lot of the work that was presented in our Nature paper.
Right.
And so we were all anxious to really view the height gradient in a redwood tree a lot like people have examined water stress along soil moisture gradients, reasoning that gravity should be an increasing problem for the leaves at the top of the tree. In order to gain water, they've got to pull water out of this conducting system that's under negative pressure. So basically, we wanted to apply a lot of basic concepts in plant ecophysiology, it's called, to studying the leaves along the height gradient in redwoods.
Well, let's unpack that last comment just a little bit. How do the tops of trees get water out of the ground? What's the system?
Well, the system is referred to sometimes as the cohesion tension model for water movement. And basically, the water is lifted. It's not pumped from the bottom. It's drawn from the top. And the energy for that comes ultimately from sunlight, which drives the evaporation of water from leaves in the process called transpiration. What that evaporation leaves behind is liquid water that's bound up in the tiny little pores in the cell walls of the leaves. And that water there exerts a capillary force, just like water that rises up through a tiny capillary tube from a dish of water. And that capillary force pulls on the entire column of water below it, all the way down into the soil, where soil particles are also binding water by capillary forces. So that column of water is literally stretched and under tension.
Wow. And you're moving quite a lot of water, because I think I read somewhere this is like several, there's several hundred kilograms of water going into a tree in a day or something like that. What was the number?
In the trees that we worked on, we have measurements underway to tell that exact value, but it's probably on the order of thousands of liters per day.
Wow. And so all this is being sucked up to the top of the tree, but you've got gravity that's working against you once you get to the top. So how do you come up with a theoretical limit?
Okay, well,
Steve Sillett's laughing because he's heard this explanation.
Steve's chuckling.
Yeah.
Well, we came up with this limit by carefully looking at a number of the functional properties of leaves along the height gradient in redwood trees. And for each of those properties, we describe the relationship to height. So, for example, we looked at a leaf structural property that's been shown to vary in plants that are stressed by soil moisture availability. So we applied that same reasoning to the height gradient. So for each of these four properties, we then described this relationship to height. Then we said, well, what's the limit? What's the most extreme that property could be based on published literature for other plants that live on land? And we then asked the question, well, we've got this value from the literature. At what height would that value be achieved in redwood based on these curves, basically, for the relationships within the crowns of redwoods?
One thing I wanted to point out is that the leaves of redwood tree, a very tall one, change dramatically along the vertical gradient from very large expanded needles at the base of the tree to the top where the leaves are scale-like and resembling just like juniper foliage at the very top. So within one tree, there's a tremendous gradient in shape of the leaves.
Interesting. Well, we have a lot of people seem to be interested in asking questions, so maybe I should throw open the calls. Let me remind people that our number is 800-989-8255. And let's go to, I've got Al in Miami, Florida. Al, what's your question?
Yeah, it's actually a couple of tree-related questions. One is, which is the tallest tree or trees, where are they? And also, how long do trees live? And where are the oldest trees?
I'll let Steve take that one.
Okay. The tallest trees are all coast redwoods, and the tallest redwoods live in mostly along the valley bottoms where there's rich soils, and obviously the forests have never been cut. And it turns out that about 80% of the 120 trees known on Earth over 350 feet exist in one state park. It's called Humboldt Redwood State Park, which is in Northern California in Humboldt County. And as far as the age of the trees go, we have confirmed redwoods being over 2,000 years, but these really big trees that might be 25 feet thick in the trunk at the base, you really can't age them without destroying them. So we really don't have a good sense of exactly how old they are. We suspect they're thousands of years old.
Wow. I have a question. Have these trees reached their total maximum height that you've theoretically calculated, or are there some in Humboldt that could grow even taller?
No, they haven't yet. They haven't reached that height. The tallest tree is about 113 meters tall, like Steve said, about 370 feet. And the estimate for maximum height that we came up with was about 122 to 130 meters. So they may have 10 to 15, 16 meters to go, and we hope to be around and monitor their height growth. I should mention, though, that they're not guaranteed to reach those heights. There are a lot of other things that happen to the tops of tall trees. Windstorms can break them, lightning strikes, fires can burn them, or the climate can change and cause that maximum height to drop down, the ceiling to fall, so to speak. So these things are constantly battling upward and then getting knocked back down the stairs and having to climb up again.
Well, you know what they say, it's tough at the top.
Yeah, we've observed in the vast majority of the very tall redwoods that I've climbed, they don't have their original leaders. They have broken and resprouted multiple times to produce their current height. So they're definitely, the biggest thing that's going to break them is probably weather.
Okay, I need to pause just for one quick second here to remind people that I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to another caller, Trina from Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hey. I was just curious. I heard y'all, I guess one of y'all talking the other day on Morning Edition or something, and I was just curious about the rain. You know, you talk about how much moisture there is on the ground. Does the rain, does it hit the tops of the trees and affect that in any way, or is it just, I'm not sure what the weather is, you know, in that area. So I don't know if they get a lot of rain, but I was just wondering if like when it rained, if they got more, you know, around here, when it rains, things turn greener.
Interesting question. Right. So what's it like when it rains at the top of a giant tree?
Well, if you're
Jordan,
in it, you get really
that?
Wet.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, first of all, you're right. It does rain a lot out there. A meter to 3 meters of rain per year is not uncommon. And there's also an input of moisture as fog in the summer when there isn't rain. So there's no way that trees would reach these heights without having soils that are basically wet all the time. And so when it rains, two things happen. Of course, the soil stays wet. But work of ours, as well as a colleague of ours, Todd Dawson at UC Berkeley, show that redwoods can absorb water directly through their foliage as well as via the roots. And that's a way to perhaps get around this problem of gravity and gain a little bit more water. Quantitatively, not a big deal, but physiologically, maybe really important.
Let's go to Tom in Los Gatos, California. Tom, you're on Talk of the Nation Science Friday.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Joe. Excellent program. Yeah, related to the previous call, I've heard that the redwood forests get up to about 100, maybe even up to 100% of their water, at least in the summer, from fog drips. I wonder, is the conventional plant community or epiphytes, whatever, like old man's beard and that sort of thing, maybe helps absorb this water like a giant sponge, especially when the tops break off? You know, water can, you know, get absorbed directly into the old wood there. As a massive reservoir of old wood, they could also absorb water like the baobab trees, you know, in Australia and Africa. Hmm. I was wondering, is that how they get the water up past the theoretical limits?
Well, so far, no trees have gone past the theoretical limit that we know of, but it's a really good point, because what happens is that these trees, over many centuries, develop giant branches and limbs that allow soils to accumulate high above the ground, and these soils are colonized by ferns and bushes, and individual trees can have, you know, 1,000 pounds or more of this soil, which functions as a giant sponge. In addition, when their tops break in storms, it exposes their heartwood to this water, and it can trickle down in. In fact, the second tallest tree that we know of is growing the fastest in height, and at 300 feet above the ground, it is snapped off completely, and then it has resprouted. And we theorize that it's sending forth roots into the rotten wood at this region where it's broken, where it's still almost 6 feet thick, and that water that it's taking out of that rotten pocket 300 feet above the ground is helping its top soon to exceed the tallest tree in the world. I think by 2005, it will be number one.
Interesting. We have time for one final quick call. Eliza in Baltimore, go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I had the fortunate opportunity to climb some tall trees with Steve when I was an undergraduate.
Oh, wow.
And hi. And I just wanted to say congratulations. I love hearing about all the research that you guys are putting out. I think it's fantastic and wonderful.
All right.
And I love the little episodes that keep coming out in the news. It's great.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. It does sound like a very interesting, exciting piece of work, and maybe we'll come back and see if you do find a taller tree that we can talk about.
We'll keep you posted, Joe.
All right, thanks. I'd like to thank my guests this hour. George Koch is an assistant professor in the Department of Biology at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff, Arizona. And Steve Sillett is an associate professor of botany in the Department of Biological Sciences at Humboldt State University in Arcata, California. Thanks to both of you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. This program is produced by Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Charles Bergquist is our director. Our intern is Eric Altman. If you'd like to write to us, please send your letters to Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. For internet mail, you can email us at scifry@npr.org. For NPR News in New York, I'm Joe Palca.